That and this, and I think it'll work. All right, so whoever's listening, sorry about that. We messed up on the first part. Okay. Good. A second thing, this is just my answer to what makes for a good worldview. Second thing is, it should answer the questions that people care about. Now, science answers a lot of questions, but it answers questions that nobody really cares about. I mean, what's chalk made out of? All right, does that really get you going in the morning? We have a chemist back there, a chemistry major, and I'm sorry to tell you this, but the things you learn in chemistry, that just doesn't answer the question. Let me give you a list of questions that I think people do care about. This is just my own list. I bet if you came up with a list, it'd be similar to this. And even those who hold to this philosophy of scientism or naturalism probably would actually have the same list. It's just embarrassing to write it down. Okay, so what is the nature of God, if you will? I think that's something that actually people care about that. What am I? In other words, what is a human being? Am I just a primate, slightly advanced? Is being a human being something more than that? What happens when we die? I think I care about that more than to explain, the enzyme that makes the muscles work. All right? I'm kind of interested in the enzymes that make the muscle work, but I'm more interested in what happens when I die. Can you relate to that? Why is it possible for us to know anything? Postmodernism does not help answer that question at all. And scientific materialism, it can't, we'll see, it can't answer that question. How do we know what's right and wrong? I think even those who don't believe in right and wrong, supposedly, I think even those people believe in right and wrong, they just won't admit it. I mean, bottom line is, I want to know if I'm doing what's right. And if I'm doing something that's wrong, I don't want to do it. And how do I determine what's right and wrong? What's my purpose in life? Now, if my life has no purpose, then what the heck? Just take care of and get it over with. Don't take up space and natural resources. The typical naturalist response is, sure, there's nothing to life. It's just bogus. You're dead like Rover, dead all over, then you die. But too bad, tough. That's just the way it is. All right, I suppose if that was true, then I guess I'd have to live with it. But you know what? Something in me tells me that is definitely not the case. Because there is a purpose in life. And what's the nature of my relationship with God? A worldview that doesn't answer those questions is not a good worldview, in my opinion. And the two that we're considering tonight do not help to answer those questions. All right, so let's talk about naturalism. See, I deal with this every day. This is kind of the stuff that I have to do with. When people talk about evolution, naturalism, otherwise known as scientism or scientific materialism, is the belief that the only reliable or valid instrument to decide what is true, or even the value of any proposition, is the scientific method. So the scientific method is the only way to decide what's true and what's not true. Okay, there's a lot of people who believe that. Anything else is just nonsense. If that's true, then there's no basis for ethics or morality. Morality is just, humans have morality just because of genes. It's, particular chemicals that are produced in your brain make you think that this is good and that's bad. In other words, they're not actually good or bad. It's just this construct that comes because of the way your brain is wired. Clearly, if it's true, there's no such thing as supernatural. So, how many of you have ever prayed? Just raise your hand if you've ever prayed. You don't have to raise your hand if you don't want to. Okay. And in that case, if these people are right, you are talking to the other cells in your brain. The one part in your brain was talking to the other cells in your brain, and that's about it. And you're really acting like a fool and an idiot. Okay? No God, no truth. Oh, except the truth that's from science. For example, I say it's true that murder is wrong. But if scientism is correct, if naturalism is true, that's not true at all. In fact, evolution says killing somebody else is actually possibly very good. Because then you're continuing your genes and your chromosomes. And if there's any purpose in life at all, according to science, it's to produce progeny. That's the only purpose, if even that works as a purpose. To me, if this is an improvement on Christian philosophy, give me a break. And these people confidently, and they laugh. Like I said, people laugh at Christianity, which was some philosophy for idiots and people just don't know better. If scientism is correct, then justice has no meaning. I'll go on. Just some statements of believers in scientism. I went to a debate last night. Christopher Hitchens, you've heard of him? It was interesting. But anyway, in the universe of blind physical forces and genetic replication, some people are going to get hurt. Other people are going to get lucky. You won't find any rhyme or reason. But this is a really fulfilling philosophy. Isn't this really, you know, really get you going? Remember the three things that make for a good philosophy? It fails. Completely fails on all three. All right. The universe we observe has precisely the properties we would expect if there's no design, no purpose, no evil, no good. This is the philosophy that is being pushed at the university as superior to the Christian philosophy. I think we need to confront that. I'm serious. Don't be intimidated. Understand how empty the philosophies are that are batted around in these classrooms. Nothing but blind, pitiless indifference. Now, if this was true, remember, one of the items that makes for a good worldview is that it needs to be true. But this is false, and I'm going to show you why it's false. DNA just is, and we dance to its music. Thomas Huxley, we're as much the product of blind forces as is the falling of a stone to earth, the ebb and flow of the tides. We just happened. And man was made flesh by a singular series of beneficial accidents. Now, my response to Thomas Huxley is, what do you mean beneficial? Oh, beneficial. What's the word beneficial mean under naturalism? How is it good that people exist? What's good about people existing? Give me one reason that it's good that people exist if you accept this philosophy, this wonderful philosophy, which is sort of the accepted philosophy, supposedly, among scientists. All right, postmodernism. There you go, postmodernism. And I'm going to talk about that a bit. Truth, if such a thing exists, is the property of culture. There is no truth. Truth is created by the people that believe it. In other words, the more people believe something to be true, then the truer it is. All right, now let's try that. All right, we'll go to the edge of a cliff. And 80 people say it's okay to jump off the cliff. 20 people say it's not. All right, let's prove that it's the better truth or something like that by 80 jumping off the cliff. Now, if this is true, if postmodernism is true, and really, truth is determined by those who hold to it, and there's really no single truth, there's no standard of truth, if that's true, then I say lying and stealing is good. In fact, those who don't lie and steal are bad people. They're not good people. And I say, you know, a culture that abuses women, a culture that that sexual abuse is part of the culture, I say that's a good culture. And if you accept postmodernism, you have to accept that. I don't know about that. All right, now, a little title here. A ridiculously brief history of science. I want to kind of give you the background for where these ideas came from. This is such a short version. I mean, it's a ridiculous short version. So let's talk about kind of the history of thought in the Western world. I'm going back to the time of the scientific revolution. Roger Bacon represents this idea. Bacon was he wasn't bald. I guess they thought if they shaved their head, they had closer connection with God. I don't know how that worked. But anyway, he was arguably the first philosopher of science, and he said, to study nature, we need to use external experience aided by instruments made precise by mathematics. Now, why did Roger Bacon believe that we could understand nature using instruments and mathematics and all that? Well, basically, Roger Bacon applied Christian theology to reach a few conclusions. He said, first of all, there exists a God, a single God, an unchanging God. Okay, I'm going to... let me see here. I wanted to use my notes. I've not yet looked at my notes even once, so I'm going to have trouble here. Okay. That's all right. I'll just throw away my notes. I don't need them. Anyway, so basically said there exists an unchanging God who created the whole universe. Well, if that's true, if there's an unchanging God who created the whole universe, then the universe should be governed by laws that are the same everywhere that don't change. That's one of the fundamental assumptions of science. And then he reasoned that second thing about you learn about God from the Bible is that God loves us and He wants to have a relationship with us. So He reasoned. Not only should there be one set of laws that governs the whole universe, but those laws should be understandable by us. Because part of how God communicates to us is through the universe that He created. You just read that in the Bible in several different places. And then he reasoned using Christian ideas that the universe should be describable by mathematics. The universe should be beautiful. It should be ordered. All right, and like I said, he was the first one to say that in order to study nature, you need to use mathematics. And then he reasoned further that the universe should be designed so that we can observe it. In other words, there should be a one-to-one correspondence between how our brain works and how the universe works so we could understand it. And guess what? We just looked at the fundamental presuppositions of science. So where did science come from? Christian theology. And if you think about it, because the next slide is saying the same thing, this is how I teach it in my philosophy of science class. First day of class, I say, these are the fundamental assumptions of science. And then we say, and guess where it came from? It came from Christian theology. In fact, all the early scientists, all of them, not only believed in God, but they had a view of God different from our modern view. For example, Copernicus, arguably the first scientist, he believed that the planets went in circular orbits around the sun, but he believed that angels moved the planets. It's not quite the modern view, okay? So, anyway, the assumptions of science, first of all, they're accepted without proof. In other words, it's impossible to prove that it's true. It's impossible to prove that the universe is governed by laws that don't change anywhere. Because if that's true, then supernatural things don't happen, which that would kind of seem to rule out some parts of Christianity. They form the basis of all scientific thinking, and they're accepted on faith. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Science, the basic ideas of science, are accepted on faith because they cannot be proved. They are literally impossible to prove. All right. And then I'm skipping forward about 400 years. All right. Now we're at Isaac Newton. That was fast. All right. And Isaac Newton discovered the law of gravity, but more importantly, came up with the idea of the mechanical universe. In other words, he created this philosophy that the universe works according to laws which kind of go on their own. So, in other words, the reason the planets go around the Earth is because of the law of gravity. And in fact, the universe is like a machine. If the universe is like a machine, then maybe God just wound it all up, and then He's just sort of off, you know, doing something else, busy somewhere else, and it's kind of going on its own. And the fact is, the honest truth is, at first glance, the universe does seem to work that way. Now, I believe that God's finger is in all the time. In fact, the Bible says if Jesus kind of took off, the universe would fall apart instantaneously. That's in Colossians 1. I don't quite say that. That's pretty close to what it says. But this led to the idea, all right, well then maybe God's not sort of moving the planets around, so maybe God is sort of the primary mover, kind of created it all, but, you know, not really involved in that so much. You kind of see where that led to. By the 1800s, or by the 1700s, people were asking, well, if the universe works like a machine, then why mention God at all? And now we're heading towards naturalism. The idea that the only truth is essentially nature. Voltaire, who taught religious skepticism, David Hume, the ultimate skeptic, and people began to ask, can we really know anything? Because science gives no certainty. Science never tells you whether something is true or not, ever. In science, everything is, well, I think so, I'm pretty sure, but we're really not sure. There's not a whole lot of solidity to that, right? Because basically in science there is no truth. Wow. And then one of my favorite stories is this guy, Laplace. He wrote a treatise on Newton's works and advanced it, and the greatest work of mathematical physics at the time. And he gave a copy to Napoleon, and he had a little audience to Napoleon. He said, using physics, we could work all the way back in time, all the way forward in time, and explain everything that ever has and ever will happen. And Napoleon said, well, where is God in this? And he said, I don't need that hypothesis. All right, so we're starting to get naturalism, which says that, you know, God, you can ignore God. By the end of the 20th century, the 19th century, science appeared to be triumphant, and, you know, and we had this whole idea, I don't know if you've ever heard of eugenics, where basically people thought, what we're going to do is we're going to improve humanity through science. So what we'll do is we'll sterilize all the, in quotes, retarded people. As, you know, that's not a nice way to say it anymore. You know, or people who have criminals, or people who are, say, the wrong race, for example, who obviously are inferior. This was coming where? From scientists, and scientists were at the leading edge of the eugenics movement, and really that was what motivated what Hitler did in his medical experiments in World War II. So then, you know, because people thought, you know, we're getting better and better in humanism, and we're going to figure it all out, and you know, the human mind is sufficient for everything, and then World War I happened, and then World War II happened, and the Holocaust, and the Hiroshima, and people thought, wow, science isn't solving any of our problems. The only problems it solved is the ones we don't even care about. Which was true all along. And then we got postmodernism. You know what happens? The pendulum swings like this, you know. I'll talk about postmodernism later. But I want to talk about naturalism a bit. Here's why I say this is a very, very poor worldview. Remember, you're bombarded with this idea all the time. The Christian worldview, that's for losers and idiots and people who just need it as a crutch. I know you hear that. And I want you to leave tonight thinking that is flat, not true. Not only is it not true, but these supposed smart philosophies that everybody's touting at the university, those are the ones that don't make any sense. They don't answer the questions we care about. They're not true. And, oh, I forgot point number three. Did you notice in the outline point number three, the most important point of all? I forgot that one. What makes for a good worldview? Oh, I forgot that one. Those who describe it are better for having taken this as their worldview. The worldview you take, it's a good one, I would say, obviously, if it makes you a better person. And if it doesn't make you a better person, then I say by definition, that's not a very good worldview. Anyway, getting back to... Alright, here we go. So, 4 points why I think this is a bogus philosophy and flat wrong. Number one, it's a religious belief. You know, they're trying to create the impression that it's kind of like, you know, people are really open-minded, surely would accept this philosophy. But I say it's a religious belief based on circular reasoning with no evidence to support it as a fundamental belief. Number two, it doesn't answer the questions that people care about. I already talked about that. Number three, it's false. And who would want to accept as their working philosophy something that's a lie? That, personally, I don't really find that very exciting. And number four, I believe it's dangerous. It's bad. Arguably evil. And so why would we want to support this kind of thinking? Scientific materialism. Only that which can be observed and measured through the technique of scientific method is real. Everything else is unreal. If you think it's real and it's not provable by science, you're deceived. That's thus the title of the book, The God Delusion by Dawkins. Here's another statement of materialism. Now listen to this carefully, because this is what you're going to be bombarded with probably in your science classes. Here we go. We exist as material beings in a material world, all of whose phenomena are the consequence of material relations among material entities. In a word, the public needs to accept materialism, which means they must put God in the trash can of history where such myths belong. Okay, if we accept that, I believe we're going to have a society and a culture that's going to go in absolutely the wrong direction. And you can see what's happened already to morality in our world. I'm disturbed about what's happened to the idea of morality. So, circular reasoning. See, this is based on unprovable assumptions. What are those assumptions? That the universe is ordered and unchanging. Okay, how do you know that? It's interesting. I was watching a forum. It was in the UK. I was watching it, and there's this really a chemist, a world famous chemist, and they were having this interactive forum. And they said, "How is it that you know that the only thing that's true is what can be proved from science?" He said, "Well, but because science has done this." They said, "How do you know that? I mean, what's your evidence for this?" He said, blah, blah, blah. And because this it was set up in the form of essentially almost like a trial sort of thing where they get cross-examined. And finally he said, "Well, because I believe it's true." And you realize that. Basically he said, "The reason I believe it's true is because I believe it's true." If that's the foundation for a belief, that I believe it because I believe it, what's that called? That's called circular reasoning. Right? That's not a very solid foundation for belief in anything. It can't be proven. In fact, science itself is not scientific. You can't do an experiment to test the fundamental assumptions of science. Okay? Doesn't mean it's bad. Number two, it can't answer the questions people care about. Now, science answers some questions really good, like when is that going to happen? Okay? How long will this thing last? Yeah. You know, what does that weigh? Science is great at things like that. Where? What? Where? How many? Yeah. And by what means? Yeah. Science is really good at answering questions like that. Alright? So, you know, if you want to build a, you know, go from here to there faster, you know, that does that really fulfill your soul to do that? Here are the questions that science can't answer. Why am I here? Is that the right thing to do? Can't help you. And don't give in to this idea that somehow naturalism is a philosophy you can live your life by. It is not. Does God exist? Will God answer if I pray? Do supernatural things happen? Science cannot even begin to answer any of those questions. Now, I believe it is patently false. It is just simply not true. Why? Because if scientific materialism is true, then I don't exist. I'm serious. Now, all right. I mean, my body exists, but what I mean is I don't exist. Think about it. Say, I want to go to the store. If the naturalist is true, that's just sheer nonsense. What do you mean, I? What's I? Seriously, what are you? You're a primate with chemicals that sort of move around and neurons that fire. If you exist at all, you exist as a bunch of electrical impulses. I think humans have more dignity than that, to be honest with you. In fact, I believe we're made in God's image. But if materialist is right, then consciousness, yeah, we are conscious. We know that we exist. We have ideas about the universe, but if the naturalist is right, you're fooling yourself to think that. All you are is chemicals. And chemicals and nerve cells and nerve impulses. And if the materialist is right, then there's no soul, no spirit, and no non-physical reality. You say, you know, I was about to say, I love you. I'm looking at Adam. All right. I say to my wife, I love you. If the naturalist is right, that's just nonsense. That's just meaningless gobbledygook. I love you. I chemical you. I don't know which part of the brain love, you know, because there are certain kind of neurotransmitters. I serotonin you or something like that.
That works.
This is a good philosophy. Belief in God is just, people believe in God because it's an accident of evolution. In fact, according to these people, a very, very unfortunate accident. It's just natural selection by unfortunately created this idea, because we all know that virtually everybody believes that there is more than just physical reality. Life has no value. Human beings have no value. You have no value if this is true. Great, wonderful. This is this philosophy, you know, and Christian philosophy is suspect, you know. Religious thought is nonsense. Art and literature and music have no value. You know, which is better, you as a kid playing on the piano and hitting weird notes, or a Beethoven symphony? Which is better? If naturalism is right, you know, which is more valuable, gold or dirt? There's, you know, this is a true philosophy. Human rights have no basis, by the way. If this is true, then human rights have no basis. None. On what basis can you say we hold these truths to be self-evident if you accept this philosophy? Unless you can do an experiment, which obviously you can't. It's false because the universe was created. The universe was created. How do I know that? Because science told us it was created. The Bible says it as well. In Genesis 1, Hebrews 11, 11:3, it says, what was visible is created from what was invisible. Life was created. Now that's another talk. All right, you know, we got to give up this projector in about 10 minutes. Yeah, so I can't talk about that. Life was created. And besides, the universe is incredibly, amazingly fine-tuned. The design of the universe is so spectacularly amazing, and to argue it's not designed is ridiculous. I believe naturalism is also dangerous, because if it's true, then good and evil are meaningless ideas. Stealing is not wrong, and any kind of sexual behavior is as good as any other kind. What would be wrong with having sex with animals? What would be wrong with having sex with your daughter? I mean, seriously, why is that wrong? In fact, I learned in my evolution class that there's some reasons why that would actually be advantageous. And prove to me that I'm wrong. This is a good philosophy. And racism, oh yes. By the way, most people who hold to this philosophy, are not only they're not racist, most of them are pretty good folks. They're, all right, you understand what I'm saying? What I'm saying is there's no basis for morality if you accept this. I'm going to skip up. Well, think about this. There have been a few countries whose laws have been created based on materialism. Okay. I'll just list them. French Revolution. Now, that was a great experiment there. Really positive stuff. Khmer Rouge, North Korea, Communist China, USSR. Those are the only ones I know of. Secular societies based on atheism. All right, that's what this philosophy has to offer. All right, postmodernism, the idea that nothing is true. Nothing is true. Reality is a social construction. It's true for you, but it's not true for me. So if you like to believe that, that's fine. It doesn't bother me. I won't bother you as long as you won't bother me. Meaning, if it exists, it lies in those who believe it. So if enough people believe something, then it's true. All right, this is a good philosophy. If this is true, then there is no truth. And point number one that describes a good worldview is eliminated, okay? Now, the correspondence theory of truth says this. A statement is true if reality corresponds to that statement. Can you buy that? If reality agrees with what you just said. If I say I'm 27 feet tall, is that true?
No.
Now, if postmodernism is correct, I realize I'm kind of exaggerating, but if postmodernism is correct, that if everybody says that I'm 27 feet tall, then I'm 27 feet tall. And if everybody says that it's okay to hate people who are Muslims, then it's okay to hate people who are Muslims. That's postmodernism. Thank you very much. Or there's relativism. A claim that is made is true for those who accept it by the very act of accepting it. That's an advantage. That's a philosophy better than the philosophy of Christianity. If postmodernism is correct, then reality is just a social construction. It's true for you. Truth is found in an accepted narrative. And those who write books have no authority to determine what it means, except postmodernists, of course. They have the authority to interpret their books. Consciousness is social, not individual. So you think that you have an individual consciousness, an individual reality, an individual belief that you are important. If postmodernism is correct, that's not true. The only thing that's important is the culture, not the individual. All truth is relative. There is no truth. And if that's true, I believe it's self-refuting. If nothing is true, then guess what else isn't true? Postmodernism. And besides, some things are just true. You know, I don't accept scientism, but science has told us some things that are true. I mean, atoms exist, molecules exist, F equals MA. You can say it doesn't. Let's say everybody says from now on F does not equal MA. I say F equals MA. I'm sorry about that. I'm sorry about that. And that shirt is yellow. That shirt is purple. All right? And postmodernism says, well, you know, if everybody says it's purple, then it becomes purple. All right? If your culture told you it's safe to jump off a cliff, would you jump off the cliff? All right. So postmodernism does not agree with reality. I believe it's also dangerous. Now, which is a better culture? Nazism or Christianity? Postmodernism says, well, they're just different cultures. All right? And if it's true, then sin is defined by those who say, if a culture says this is sin, then it's sin by definition. If a culture says it's not, then it's not by definition. All right? Would you like to live in a world like that? The answer is you're living in a world increasingly like that. Now I want to talk about something positive. I'm going to talk for only about 10 more minutes. I want to talk about the Christian worldview. The Christian worldview is this. The physical world is real, it's created, and it's good. Okay? There's a lot of people, believe it or not, Hindu philosophy, Buddhist philosophy, Eastern philosophy in general, denies that this world is real. Greek philosophy says the world is bad. Okay? But God, when He made the world, Genesis 1:31, He said it was good. It was very good. It's real. And to me, I like that philosophy because it's true. It was created. You know why I like that philosophy? Because it's true. And it's good. You know why I like that philosophy? Because it's true. Second thing in the Christian worldview, it says there exists a parallel unseen spiritual reality, which is not limited to or defined by the physical reality. Now, I can't prove that one. I can't do an experiment. I can't put some chemicals in a thing and prove that. But you know what? There's a lot of reasons why I believe that there is a soul, there is a spirit. I mean, the fact that Jesus was raised from the dead, that tells me something. The fact that the Bible predicted over 1,000 years beforehand that the Messiah would be crucified, that tells me there's a reality beyond physical reality. That tells me that even time and physical space are not ultimate limitations. So there is a reality beyond the physical. If the Christian worldview says the creator of the physical and the spiritual world is the God who's revealed in the Bible. It says human beings have both a physical and a spiritual nature. But the spiritual nature is more important than the physical nature. Why? Because it's eternal. All right? The Christian worldview. Although the world is good, evil exists. Why does evil exist? See, postmodernism can't explain the existence of evil because it says it doesn't exist. Naturalism can't explain evil because it says it doesn't exist. All right, and I say genocide is evil. I say sexual abuse is evil. I say lying is wrong. I say adultery is wrong. It's evil. I say dishonesty is wrong. I say stealing is wrong. So, so evil does exist. And why does evil exist according to the Bible? Because God loved us so much that He gave us a freedom to choose. And think about that. Everybody here understands love. Now, scientists theoretically don't understand love, but they actually do, of course. Obviously they do. All right? And love gives a choice, doesn't it? Imagine parents who never let their children make any choices. You got a 47-year-old person, and mom and dad, is it okay if I go to the bathroom and and stuff like that? Love gives, in fact, for somebody to love you, you can't force somebody to love you, can you?
No.
So to me, the fact that God is love and He made us in order to love Him, that's a truth that is absolutely inescapable. That's part of the Christian worldview. But the cause of evil is that God gave us a choice and we chose to rebel against Him. And how can you deny that? You guys are almost teenagers, all right? How can you deny that humans are essentially rebellious if you've been around teenagers? This is the wrong audience to mention that to. By the way, if they want to take the projector down, they can. I don't know if they're coming for that.
They're good. It'd be good to do some Q&A.
All right, great. I'm almost done. And there's a definite right and wrong for human behavior, which is determined by God. That's the Christian worldview. Christianity answers the questions of how did I get here, answers the question of why am I here, it answers the question where am I going, it tells me why human beings are able to comprehend the universe, it tells me why there's pain and suffering in the world, it answers every single question that anybody cares about. But that's not all, because Christianity is true. It answers the problem of sin. Now, does ignoring a problem make it go away? No, so people can pretend it doesn't exist. It says the problem of sin is solved by the Son of God. The problem of suffering. The problem of suffering, first of all, suffering in itself is not evil, but the solution to suffering is compassion. That is the Christian solution to suffering. What's the atheist solution to suffering? Suffering is probably good for you because... Well, anyway, I'm not going to go into that. It solves the problem of death as well, doesn't it? The Christian view has given us science. The Christian worldview has given us... If it were not for Christianity, slavery would still dominate the whole earth. I'll tell you that right now. If it were not for Christianity, civil rights wouldn't exist. If it were not for Christianity, there'd be no women's rights. History tells us these are all facts. And I've been all over the world, and in every country, in Buddhist countries, guess who does most of the benevolent work? Christian groups. In Hindu countries, guess who does most of the benevolent work? Christian groups. I'd say in Muslim countries, it's the Muslim culture, the Muslim worldview does include good work. So I'll concede that, and that's good. But even in Muslim countries, even there, a large proportion of all the benevolent work is done by Christians. Why? Because the Christian worldview is a good worldview. It's a worldview that makes people better. It's true. So, what is truth? Jesus says, I am the truth. And I'm the way, the truth, and the life. What's the truth according to postmodernism? Nothing. Jesus is truth. How do I know Jesus is truth? Because He fulfilled the prophecy of the Messiah. You know, Jesus said, I'm the bread of life. What did He do right before He said, I'm the bread of life? Right before He said, I'm the bread of life, what did He do? In front of thousands of people, He made bread out of nothing, right? Jesus says, I'm the resurrection and life. What did He do about 20 minutes later? He raised Lazarus from the dead. He said, destroy this temple and I'll raise it on the third day. What did He do? He raised from the dead on the third day. See, that's why I believe the Christian worldview is the right worldview. All right. We're going to take some questions and answers here. On any subject, right?
Yeah.
Any subject.
Can I just say a couple things real quick, John?
Sure.
Sorry. I think one of the coolest things is having like a scientist who totally believes in God. Let's give it up for Dr. Rose.
All right.
I think that's one of those things. I want to say something real quick and then kind of open
it
up, kind of prep people. But I know in college, we're either you have already or you're going to be, if you're in college or going to college, you're often exposed to various worldviews and philosophies. Just all kinds of things, depending on the faith that you grew up in. Sometimes coming to college just totally spins kind of your views, like spins them out of control. And you're exposed to a lot of things. You got PhDs telling you there is no God, all kinds of stuff like that. It's great to have them saying, here are reasons why. Here's reasons that we can be confident to believe in God and just the Christian worldview. So I think that's really cool. So what we wanted to do is kind of open it up to have a Q&A. Because I know a lot of you are wondering, hey, where can I get a haircut like that guy Frank Bacon? No, really, I know some of us are wondering, even some simple stuff like what's up with dinosaurs? You know what I mean? We want to ask John some very hard-knocking questions, but I know there's just very, because sometimes what we might consider simple questions, but really stuff we want to know about, that we're interested in. And so we want to take the time to do that. If you have questions about his presentation, questions about anything, that you could ask someone who's a scientist and yet a strong believer in the Bible and in God, this is your time to do that. So, and the harder the question, the better.
That's right.
Right. So who wants to open it up?
I think I raised more questions than I answered. So.
Yeah, you gotta be brave here. Yeah. Okay, we got one right here.
Joe.
Going to the topic of suffering.
Yeah.
I think of like the tsunami in 2005.
Right.
Hundreds of thousands of people were killed.
Right.
A God of mercy, a God of love, how does He allow that type of suffering to exist?
That's a good question. Now, in my opinion, most of the suffering in the world is caused because of sin. In other words, God gave us a choice, we rebelled, we sinned. But obviously not all suffering is caused by sin. In fact, when the tsunami happened, there were mullahs in Sumatra who said the reason it happened is because people hadn't been going to the mosques sufficiently. And to me, I don't even think that the Quran is true, so I just don't think that explains it very well. Let me tell you why it happened. The reason it happened is because there's two plates in the earth, and they slipped like that. Okay? Now, Now, God created the earth, and He created this thing called plate tectonics.
That's right.
And I say plate tectonics is a good thing. Let me tell you why plate tectonics is a good thing. If we didn't have plate tectonics, what it does, what plate tectonics does is it recycles the crust of the earth. If it were not for plate tectonics, then the surface of the earth would have become sterile hundreds of millions of years ago. Maybe there'd be bacteria, and that'd be about it. Okay, so that's one good thing about plate tectonics. Another good thing about plate tectonics is that's what creates our atmosphere. In other words, without plate tectonics, our atmosphere, the atmosphere of the Earth, would be virtually non-existent. So I say plate tectonics is a good thing. Now, in fact, those who would complain about plate tectonics, I'd like to hear a better plan. So if you got a better set of physical laws that you can come up with to create a universe that actually works and goes on its own, and the planets move around, and the energy comes in there for free, it's really cool, and all this sort of stuff. If you can do one that doesn't have plate tectonics, then I'd like to hear your plan for that. I'm sort of kidding in a way, but in a way I'm not kidding. And if you want to go to a planet without plate tectonics, go to Mars. That just doesn't work very well. So, to me, the universe is incredibly, spectacularly, fantastically, wisely made, but it is a dangerous place. You know, God, why did God? What about hurricanes? You know, what about that? What's up with God? Is he stupid? He can't figure that out? No, I say weather is a brilliant and amazing creation. In fact, if it weren't for weather. By the way, God had the earth tilted, which was also a really cool thing because it kind of that's also really good. If it were not for weather, then most of the earth would be uninhabitable. That wouldn't be so good. But in creating this incredible thing called weather, sometimes the weather gets a little rough, okay? And by the way, those who assume that the tsunami is evil are making an assumption that I don't accept, which is that death is evil. Death is evil if you're maybe a scientific materialist. But I'm going to take your question in a second, by the way. You're next in line, no matter what, okay? But, you know, according to the Christian worldview, which not only is a nice one, and I'm glad it's true, but it happens to be true, according to that, death is a transition to something that hopefully would be better. So, that's my answer to that question. Okay, next question.
Oh, I was just going to ask, what is up with dinosaurs?
What's up with dinosaurs?
Everybody's wondering that, just so you know.
Well, the dinosaurs kind of came into existence around 240 million years ago, right after the mass extinction of that 250 million years ago. They were killed out around 63, 64 million years ago. Probably, at least partially, because of a huge asteroid that hit the Earth about then. Okay? Now.
And John, how come the Bible doesn't talk about dinosaurs?
Well, let's just imagine that you're a Jew living, 3,500 years ago, and God, I'm going to change the version of Genesis 1, okay? All right, so on the first day, God caused the Big Bang to happen, which was this massive production of protons and neutrons and all this sort of stuff. I mean, imagine you're a Jew 3,500 years ago, and then gravity collapsed that matter back down again and formed the planets and stars, Now, dinosaurs, God said, let me tell you about dinosaurs, and let me tell you about bacteria, by the way, because bacteria, first I made bacteria, they're so small you can't see it except with a microscope. Oops, forgot there's no such thing as a microscope. Alright, so, I mean, Genesis chapter 1 is an accurate description of what happened. Basically, here's Genesis 1:1. Light, okay, Big Bang, flash of light. Earth exists because Genesis 1 is written from the perspective of the surface of the earth. So the earth exists. It's covered with water. There's night and day, but the atmosphere is so thick. Here's a trick question. Okay, trick question. If you were on Mars, how often would you see the sun? Trick question. If you're on Venus, did I say Mars?
Yeah, you said Mars.
If you're on Venus, Venus, how often would you see the sun? The answer is never. You'd have night and day, but no sun, moon, or stars. If you were on Venus, you would have no idea that sun, moon, and stars even existed. It's like, it's light, okay, well, now it's dark. That'd be the whole thing. So there was light and darkness, and then land separated from the water, then life appeared on the water, and then that life kind of changed the chemistry of the entire earth itself, changed the atmosphere from reducing to oxidizing. That's another story. And then the atmosphere cleared, the sun, moon, and stars appeared in the heavens, then life appeared on the land, first simple life, then more advanced life, then human beings. That's Genesis 1:1. That sounds pretty good to me. Now, the question is, well, what about the six 24-hour periods? All right, well, because clearly, the whole question of dinosaurs is coming from that, I'm assuming anyway, right?
No, I know that they existed like way before like Jesus and the earth, like
oh, yeah. Well, yeah, like I said, probably around 64 million years ago, they ceased to exist. All right. But my experience is when people ask that question, they're saying, well, since the Earth is only about 8,000 years old, then what's up with dinosaurs, basically? That's, you know, yeah, especially East County, San Diego, there's a lot of people who have that question. I get a lot of students who ask that question. And by the way, I'm not putting down East County, San Diego, okay? I guess I just did, didn't I?
Yeah, you did, yeah.
All right. Well, so I just have to apologize to Adam, who's from East County. All right, good. But anyway, so the question is, are those days metaphorical or are they literal? But going back to the dinosaurs, I mean, if God had described all these things in detail, which wasn't the point of it anyway, it would have been very, very confusing. So he just gave a very, very simple outline, which is accurate. So the question is, are those days literal 24-hour periods? The answer is, well, hard to say just from reading the Bible. I suppose we could maybe look at science and let that tell us. Now, how about this? I'm guessing that most of the people in this room believe in an all-powerful, all-knowing, all-everything type God, right? Could that God create the earth? Boom, it appears old at the instant it's created.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Of course. Jesus said, you know, I can make children of Abraham out of these stones. And I believe it. And when Jesus made that wine, how old did the wine appear to be? I don't know, a few months or whatever. He made the fish. How old was the fish? It was 0.1 seconds old, right? But it looked at least 6 years old. So God could have made the earth appearing old. Could have done that. See what I'm saying? But if that's true, then that's kind of weird. What that would mean is that, I guess, dinosaurs never existed, so God put their fossils in the ground. That just doesn't seem right. But I'm serious. I really don't know what God did. I mean, God could do whatever He wanted to do. And I'm not here to tell Him what to do or how to do it. You know what I'm saying? But if the Earth is just a few thousand years old, then let's imagine you're looking through a telescope at a galaxy a billion light years away. Okay? You got that? You're looking through a telescope at a galaxy a billion light years away. Okay? How long ago did the light leave that galaxy? A billion years ago. So how old is that galaxy at least then, obviously? A billion years old. So science tells us the universe is quite old, and I don't believe the Bible contradicts that at all. So there's this certain group of people that interpret it in a certain way that I don't agree with that. The Hebrew word yom is translated. I've got a book over here. Is there a God that goes into a lot of detail on that? Too long an answer. So let's go for another question. All right. This one's
the gentleman in black.
All right. There's two gentlemen. Well, blue, black. All right. Hurley.
Okay. So, like, you do a good job, like putting the holes through science. So like, we're not really sure. They can't have the absolute answers, and they don't have the answer to everything.
Right.
It's basically like the gist of it. But just because science doesn't have the answer to everything, then we have to go to God is the answer to everything. I mean, just because science doesn't have the answers,
right?
Do we automatically just go, I give up, and there's a God?
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not. Now, what I was not asked to do tonight is give evidence for why I believe in God. All right, all I did was I kind of threw some stuff up there really quickly. The fact that the universe was created, That tells me a creator. The fact that the universe is so blatantly, brilliantly, and incredibly, amazingly designed, and I don't, do you have much background in physics and astrophysics and that kind of stuff? But, for example, let me give you an example. What was discovered by cosmologists is the force of gravity is so finely tuned, if it was changed, if it was, one, if it was bigger from what it is by 1 part in 10 to the 60th, got that? If the force of gravity is bigger from what it is by 1 part in 10 to the 60th, the universe would have gone like this and like that within a very short time. If gravity is weaker than it is, by 1 part in 10 to the 60th, the universe would have expanded indefinitely. There would have been no stars and no galaxies. So in other words, it's 1 in 10 to the 60th possibility of getting that number right by accident. It turns out every single parameter that defines how the universe works is like this. The size of the electrical force is like almost exactly what it needs to be, and all these things. Yes. And so this is such striking information that, for example, Anthony Flew, the most famous atheist in the world, in the mid part of the 20th century, 4 years ago, he said, "I give up. There's obviously a designer and a creator." So the evidence for design is overwhelming. And then I could talk about evidence for specifically for Jesus being divine. The fact that's another hour lesson in itself. All the prophecies that were fulfilled, the miracles that happened, those kinds of things. So, absolutely, your question is not only is it legitimate. If you don't ask that question, you're kind of crazy. Just because we can show scientism doesn't answer everything, doesn't mean then therefore obviously, you know, such and such is the answer. You should ask skeptical questions.
Yeah.
And I please do.
But like, how can you know with such certainty there's going to be like a heaven, that there's going to be hell, and that God, based on what is written?
That is based on faith.
Okay, so
100%, absolutely on faith.
Then there can't be anything wrong with not having faith, because we live our life logically, and usually we don't say, you know, I have faith that this is going to happen, so I'm not really going to do it. So that some people don't have that irrationality towards one part of their life,
mm-hmm.
spiritual. I mean, you kind of make them seem like they're bad people, like without
right.
God, that they wouldn't have morals, which, you know, there was morals before
right.
the Ten Commandments, and, you know,
right.
and Christianity hasn't really solved all those problems, so, I kind of think there are people that are on one side that are, you know, all people that believe
right.
in God are kind of crazy, but then you got kind of you who's saying these scientists are crazy.
I don't think they're crazy at all. I think that scientism as a philosophy is not sufficient. That's what I'm saying. Now, basically, Jesus made truth claims. And here's what I'm going to say. Forget postmodernism. I'm sorry. By the way, postmodernism has given us... I'm serious. Postmodernism, there's some really good stuff about postmodernism, just so you know. Because it's helped us... It's helped us understand the importance of culture. It's helped us understand the importance of history. It's helped us understand the importance of cultures and groups. You know, so postmodernism does have some good things to offer, just so you know. Just as a worldview is where it's got problems. But... I lost my train of thought. Oh, rats, I should have known better. And they go off on that tangent. Alright, so Jesus made truth claims. Jesus said, "No one comes to God except through me." He made that claim. And the way I say it is, either that's true or it's not true. But that's a pretty big claim. And so your job is to investigate that claim. But not throw up your hand and say, "Well, whatever, you can't really know anything." Because
that's not what I'm saying, but
right, I'm not accusing you of that of either.
I know.
But see, some things I believe because of the evidence, other things I believe because of faith. For example, I believe that the universe was created because of the evidence. Mm-hmm. I believe life was created because of the evidence. Mm-hmm. I believe the Bible is inspired by God because of the evidence, and I could tell you I got presentations galore about that. Right. But I'm going to tell you right now, I believe in heaven 100% absolutely in faith. I have no evidence for it whatsoever. None. I could offer you no evidence.
So
I can offer you no evidence whatsoever that the blood of Jesus can cause forgiveness of sins. That is on faith, and I'm not apologetic about that at all.
So that, in your eyes, it's okay not to believe that, not to have... Well, I don't know if you know okay, but as people who live your life in logic and not necessarily okay. on faith, for people to say, logically, I just really don't see how this can happen, how could that be a bad thing? I mean, you're kind of picking and choosing where faith is going to be. You know, and I'll have logic here in these areas of science, but in this matter, I'm going to go all faith.
Right. Yeah, there are aspects of reality that only are accessed through faith. All right, and that's my view of the world. And you don't have to accept that view. I think what you need to do is investigate it. However, I'm just going to inform you that according to the Bible, all right, those who reject faith in God will be held accountable. Now, that may be something that you don't like, but one of the things when I was talking about what makes for a good worldview is worldview good because we like it? Is that what makes a worldview good? Is a worldview good because we find ourselves naturally agreeing with that? Is a worldview good because it gives us good physical and emotional health? Is a worldview good because it creates happiness? Is a worldview good because it creates economic growth and eliminates poverty? This is just my opinion. That's not what defines a good worldview. A good worldview is one which is true, one which answers the important questions, and one which makes people better than they would be if they did not believe that worldview. I believe Christianity meets all those things. Not only that, having investigated it very thoroughly for about 25 years, I believe the claims themselves are actually true. Now, if you're not convinced of that, obviously we're not in a position we're not in a position to settle that. I just want to challenge you to investigate. I want to challenge you to investigate those claims. But don't accept them just because I said so. That would be foolish. Right? All right.
Let me pick them, Jeff, because I know
all right.
people.
All right.
I want to pick people I usually don't see.
All right.
I think you'll be exposed to maybe ask later.
Great.
So, just for time's sake, the young lady in the purple.
Okay. Besides the fact that the world's gonna end when Jesus comes.
Yeah.
Is there an estimated time of how long?
Science will tell you that the Earth will end roughly about 4 billion years from now, when our star uses up its source of helium and becomes a red giant and swallows up the Earth. All right. Now, the Bible wouldn't disagree with that, but the Bible would say that Jesus is going to come back probably before 4 billion years. The Bible does not say an amount of time. In fact, if somebody tells you Jesus is going to come back in this amount of time, you should probably just... Alright, and there's a lot of people out there, a lot of popular Christianity and all that sort of stuff. I don't want to get into that right now. But Jesus said, I'm going to come back, and the Bible says to God, a day is like 1,000 years, and 1,000 years is like a day. I don't know when. Jesus says, be prepared. It's going to come when you don't expect it. So if those people say they expect it at a certain date, then they're almost certainly wrong, unless just a total accident if they happen to be right. But it's not 4 billion years, I'm pretty sure, and I have no idea how long it's going to be. I wish I could tell you.
Might be tonight, though, just so you know.
Seriously. If you look at the church in the first century, they had a sense it could happen at any time. Right. Yeah, so repent or perish, okay? Right now. We got some water outside.
Did you grow up, is your family Christian?
I grew up in a very traditional denomination, and I kind of wore the robes and did the thing. But I didn't believe in God. It's funny. I was the president of our church youth group, but I didn't believe in God. I was an atheist.
So, but like, there's so many different religions, and
let me tell you the story there. I did. Let me tell you the story. Now, so, I went off to college, and you know, I had Nietzsche the first semester. I was like, Nietzsche said God is dead. I said, yeah, that's really cool. You know, I was really excited about that. And I remember the Christian guy coming through the dorm and sharing his faith and inviting me out to this thing. Josh McDowell was there. That's a long time ago. You know, sometime in my junior year in college, partly because of studying science, I kind of reached an epiphany, like, oh my God, that God. But at that point, I was not assuming Christianity at all, not at all. I went towards Eastern religion, mysticism, Buddhism, Hinduism, every other ism. I got involved in a kind of a mysticism kind of religion. And it was only about 2 years later that I was invited to a biblical New Testament kind of church. And then, you know what it was for me? It was seeing the love that was genuine. Jesus said, they'll know you're my disciples by your love for one another. And it's like, it's sort of almost like it flipped a switch. So I started to take the Bible seriously. And then when I started reading the Bible, it was like, again, oh my God, again, oh my God. I mean, because the Eastern religion, it didn't strike me as true. When I studied Eastern religion, it was telling me stuff that as a scientist I couldn't possibly believe. I mean, you know, crazy, weird stuff. So, that was 25 years ago. Oh, it was 30 years ago, actually. All right, next question.
Other questions?
Black.
Yeah, gentleman in black.
The man in black.
I want you to answer Joe's question again.
Okay.
Because a lot of people struggle with like suffering and pain and suffering. And how could you explain biblically why God sometimes can redeem, like, as a result of suffering caused by man? Because, for example, like slavery or...
Right. Now, there's two possibilities. And to me, I'm kind of weird this way. I think something's either true or it's not. I mean, I know some things are gray areas, but the fundamental truths are either true or they're not. All right. Either God gave us a choice, or He didn't give us a choice. You know? And the Bible says that He gave us a choice, and it's apparent that He did. That's one cool thing about, like I said, about the Christian worldview and Christian theology, is that what it says matches what I know to be true from experience. And God gave us a choice. Some people would say that's evil. I say that's good. Now, the fact that He gave us a choice, did that result in the production of evil?
Yeah.
Absolutely it did. But I say that that is better, not worse. You know, to me, if I didn't have a choice of whether to love God or not, then that would mean that I couldn't love God. And as a human being, as a parent, you're not a parent, I'm a parent. As a parent, I understand that aspect of God. All right, and so God gave us a choice. And again, either He gave us a choice or didn't. And we screwed up big time. I mean, we screwed up big time. And you know who suffers because of that? God suffers because of that. God suffers a lot because of that. You say, well, it's God. How could He suffer? Well, if I understand the Bible, God experiences deep pain because of that. So, by the way, up front there's a CD and a DVD on the problem of pain and suffering. Right? Oh, you have it already. Ah, so you're just feeding me a softball question. Ah, softball. Okay.
If we're naturally born as sinners and our tendency is to sin, where's the free choice in not trying to sin?
See, there's this idea that sinful nature. I think we do have a choice. I don't want to get into the whole thing about Reformed theology and Calvinism and all that kind of stuff. I think we've been sold a bill of goods on that. I really do. I mean, we have a nature, the Bible says all sin and fallen short of glory of God. And, we could talk about Adam and the choice of Adam and how that works. But, God provided a solution to the problem. But the only other, either God was going to solve the problem by sending His Son Jesus, or God was going to solve the problem by saying, I'm going to wipe everybody out and get rid of them all, or God was going to solve the problem by taking away choice. And you know, anyway, to some extent, it's like, who are we to tell God what to do? You know what I'm saying? But I kind of like the choice. I mean, I'm kind of down with that. It's good for me. Is He said, you know, that, you know, people are going to have to choose whether they're going to come back to me. And as a parent, you know, it's tough. You know, if you're going to be a parent someday, I just kind of warn you, it could turn out pretty bad. You could go for a lifetime of pain and suffering and hurt because your child turns their back on you. But that's just, if you want to give and receive love, that's just the way it is.
We got about 10 minutes left, so we want to do a couple more.
Yeah, right up here?
In the Old Testament, there's stuff that people say are myths and stuff, but there are some stuff that have been proven, like the flood. But how can... I know like the New Testament is probably historically the most accurate stories in history, just through research. But how can you put Old Testament... being accurate with the New Testament, like saying that the Messiah will come and be crucified, like,
yeah,
how do you know? Because I know a lot of people are like, well, people like just changed the Bible, like when during the New Testament time when Jesus came, like, how do you know, like, it doesn't change?
That's another talk I could have done. I've got a nice long presentation. Did you get my card for my website? Okay, go there and just do a little thing on history, archaeology, and the Bible as a PowerPoint there. But yeah, there again, remember that statement by Dallas McCown that said Christianity is essentially scientifically bogus, philosophically suspect, and historically fraudulent. I say to Dallas McCown, really? Do you have an example? Could you tell me a single example of a historical claim in the Bible that's actually not true, and we know it's not true? The Old Testament is, not only is it the most accurate history we have of the ancient world, it's by far the most ancient, the most accurate history we have of the ancient world. Let me just give you a couple examples. For example, well, into the early 20th century, the Bible talks about the Hittites. You've heard of the Hittites. And archaeologists and historians laughed at them about Hittites, Perizzites, whatever, gobbledygookites or whatever, you know what I'm saying? And they said the Hittites were a myth. And then in 1906, Hugo Winkler discovered Hattusha, the capital of the Hittites, which was a huge city, a large empire. In fact, you can actually major in the Hittite language in college now, this mythological people. Let me give you another example. Another example. Are we good? Right. Another example is, there's kind of an obscure reference. It's in Daniel chapter 5. Daniel 5, where this guy, Belshazzar, says to Daniel, you know, if you can interpret the writing on the wall, I'm going to give you the third place in the kingdom.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Now, two things. First of all, historians said there was no such person as Belshazzar. Herodotus listed all the kings of Babylon, and Belshazzar is not on there. Other historians also listed all the kings in Babylon. Belshazzar is not there. Daniel says Belshazzar was king of Babylon. Everybody else says it wasn't. And then in the 70s, they found an inscription in Ur. And it said what happened, because Nabonidus was the last king of Babylon. But almost as soon as he took the reign, he went off to Tama, this city in the desert, to worship the moon god. He left his son, Belshazzar, behind, who ruled as the regent king for 17 years. Now remember, in Daniel it said that Belshazzar offered the third place in the kingdom. Why the third place in the kingdom? Because Belshazzar had the second place in the kingdom. And the Bible didn't say that. It didn't tell us why, and yet, so see, that's the kind of detail, that's the kind of historical detail that the Bible gets right. And historians always say, oh, the Bible's wrong here, it's wrong there, it's wrong over there. And then we prove that that's actually true. They say, all right, oh, fine, but it's wrong over here. And they just keep moving around. Now, I would say this, before Abraham, the Bible is essentially prehistory, before Abraham. I'm just going to be honest with you. And between Abraham and David, the Bible is kind of semi-historical in the sense that we don't have a bunch of physical things that proves those detailed things. It's only from David on that we have some detailed historical knowledge to say that, you know, you can't deny the Bible is accurate. Well, you can, but you're swimming against the facts. Okay, I could give you more. Okay. Yeah, that's in the book Reasons for Belief. Yeah. There's a chapter on that.
Yeah.
All right.
Any other burning questions? Like, anything else burning? You know what I mean? Like, if I don't get asked this question, I'll never come back.
All right, we got there's a red shirt right there. There you go.
I'm in a red shirt.
Last one.
Sorry. That's the pressure.
If faith in the Bible is good. How do we develop that faith?
By testing it, I would think. By testing it. One thing's for sure is, in this world, if you don't want to suffer, there's one good way to avoid suffering. It's to sit on a couch. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And, you know, you have to step out on faith. Yeah, and I like to think that I live a life that requires me to rely on my faith rather than on myself. So I say, live a life on the edge based on faith in God. You know, God says, He says, trust me in this. In the context, He's talking about giving. He says, trust me in this. But if you never give in faith, then how can you grow in your faith? So, you know, I'd say Christian apologetics can be helpful in building up your faith. Absolutely. But if it's just up here, that's not the kind of faith that biblical faith. I think it has to come from experience. It has to come from a life of doing things that requires faith. And, you know, I do a lot of crazy stuff. I do a lot of crazy stuff. And it's great. And my faith has increased because of that. Okay?
Let's give it up for Dr. Rowe. Close with a couple comments. Is on your seats, you should have found one of his business cards. And did we pass out enough to go around in the back, or do we need some more?
There, if you go there, there's over 1,000 questions that have been taken and answered.
Hold on.
And if you don't find the question there, just send me a question. I answer every single email.
And then secondly, just he brought a lot of his own books and books from other like science.